Good evening out there to the LSU football podcast in the world. It's the Go Show, your original LSU podcast, in partnership with Anda, thevalleyshook.com, part of SB Nation. I am Kerry Munch, your host. With me tonight, Billy Gamilla from ATVS. What's going on, Billy?
Not too much, guys. How's everybody doing?
We are just dandy. We'll be joined by Chris Burmeister from collegeofmagnolia.com. Also, that's the Auburn SB Nation site. He will be joining us later on in the program to talk LSU-Auburn, but we will be breaking down the LSU-Kent State game tonight and also previewing LSU and Auburn with Chris from College of Magnolia a little bit later on in the show. Ways to get in touch with the show, as always, visit the website, first and foremost. That's And the Valley Shook, www.andthevalleyshook.com, andthevalleyshook.com, where you see various blogs from various people, Billy Gamilla being one of them. I do not write anymore. I used to blog. No, not for that site, but I used to blog. But I'm just more of a talking head now. So you won't see any of my stuff on there. You just see Billy and Poser and podcasts, breakdowns of games, previews of games, thoughts, stuff like that. Podcast, the man behind the scenes. We call him the Cajun Billy D. Williams. He's pushing buttons behind the scenes. He's going to edit up all this crap that I'm talking right now. Ways to download the show. You can go to the site when it's posted. This is, I'm sorry, I forgot to say this is a Go Show. Wednesday, September 18th, 2013. Kent State Review Auburn Preview Edition. Ways to find the show. Like I said, like I was trying to state, and I keep cross-guessing myself here. Download us free from to your smartphone device from iTunes. That is the easiest way to find it. And from there, you can find old show archives and things of that nature. Shows are posted on the website as they become available. And also, you can tweet. You can tweet at the site. You can tweet at Valley Shook. You can tweet at the host. You can tweet at Billy at ATVS underscore Chef Billy. You can tweet at me at Go Show Carry. It's GAUXSHOWCAREY. So LSU Kent State, LSU wins it 45-13. And I'm going to toot my own horn here. Not that I ever do that ever on this show, but was looking back at the pick'em from last week, and I looked at my tiebreaker score, 45-13. Do I get any podcast? I should get a koozie for that. I saw I was one of, I think there was a couple other people that actually predicted 45-13. So I think I actually said 45-10 on the show. So I was close in spoken word too. There's no real proof of me actually predicting the exact score in a tiebreaker for the Go Show pick'em. But, you know, just to brag about myself for a second, I'm going to take full advantage of that since I have the microphone. What to take from this game, Billy? My first thoughts are, you know, it's a game against Kent State. Again, we saw LSU jump out to a big lead, kind of get lackadaisical for a lapse in the second quarter. But I think, you know, and we'll get into the game in full detail. But if I'm going to harp on something real bad first, I'm looking at the penalties, which was, you know, hopefully they got this all out of their system, Billy. I hope, you know, going forward, this was kind of just a blip on the radar, not something that's going to become a habit. It was a lot of false starts, things like that. Just one of those things I think where maybe their focus was, you know, maybe once they jumped out to that big lead, maybe they started looking, okay, now we got SEC fixing the kick in the high gear. We got this game under control. Maybe it was definitely lack of concentration when you're playing a team of caliber Kent State and you jump up to the big early lead, but you know, still some things that you really didn't want to see going into that last warm up game before you get in the conference play, Bill.
Yeah, I mean, I thought overall it was an improvement over UAB. Like you said, the penalties that was the biggest thing that jumped out. A lot of it being pre snap kind of. You know, lack of focus kind of penalties that we haven't really seen from this team. So I'm willing to dismiss them as of now as, I think, a one-time thing. excuse me. overall, pretty vanilla. You know, offense didn't show a lot. A lot of kind of button down formations and just really, really good execution, which is always nice to see, and definitely, you know, an upgrade over years past, especially in the passing game. Defense, I thought it was interesting that the defense rotated a lot of guys and kind of stuck with their basic stuff. They didn't do a lot of nickel. They didn't do a lot of dime. Kind of stayed in base with three linebackers on the field almost all game and kind of, you know, said, hey, let's see what y'all can handle. And result, you saw UAB kind of hitting a lot of short throws to their slot receivers and running backs who were, you know, matched up on linebackers. And that's something I don't think you're going to see too often out of this team. You know, they're not going to trust Kwon Alexander to cover a lot of slot receivers in the SEC, but in a situation like this, where you're still kind of trying to figure out exactly what your starting lineup is, you know, maybe throw them out there and just see how they do and see who performs and who gets the job done.
Yeah. So many, and this has been the MO of Chavis in these early games, from the onset, and it's paid dividends for us, in years past down the road in SEC play. And I think it's going to do the same this year, where you're still trying to figure out, you know, what this defense is, you know, losing eight starters from a year ago, only returning three. They're mixing and matching a lot of different guys in there at different times. Tre'Davious White got his first start and performed excellent. Got a little nicked up on that one good play he made on that screen pass. But he's good to go. Les Miles said in the presser, on Monday that everybody's practicing. Everybody's good to go. All the little nicks and bruises and things like that. You know, everybody's fine for Auburn. You saw a lot of him. He got his start. I don't know if you see him start again for Saturday, but he's definitely earned a spot in that cornerback rotation. He's going to see some viable playing time, I believe. But he looks to be a playmaker. So looking forward to see him on the field. You saw a lot of different, you know, just different combinations of different guys. Just a lot of rotation on the defensive line. You saw a lot of good play out of the defensive line again. Eagle Ferguson led the team in tackles with eight. Jordan Allen was solid again. You know, we yielded, you know, some those points in the second quarter, but only for the game. I mean, 248 for the game given up. 190 passing. You saw some, I mean, good, decent quarterback efficiency. It's something you'd like to see LSU cut down on, which is what they've been really good in the past at, was defensive quarterback efficiency, if you will. As far as, you know, lack of the other team's quarterback making those plays and being efficient and, you know, completing passes at a high percentage and things like that. So, all things that, you know, they're still showing some improvement on, and I think they're ready for Auburn. We'll talk about some of the concerns, defensively for Auburn when we talk Auburn a little bit, but, you know, we were talking about lack of a running game last week against UAB. Well, guess what? Those questions were answered. We saw two running backs go over 100 yards. Jeremy Hill, you know, first part of the game breaks a 58-yard touchdown run. He gets over 100 yards in the first half. Terrence McGee plays the majority of the second half. He gets over 100 yards in the second half. So, you know, I think we ran what we were at, 307. So on 37 carries, so 8 yards a carry. I mean, I know it's against Kent State, but we didn't see that. We didn't see those yards per carry average against UAB. So that's something to be encouraged by. You're going to see I think you're starting to see an offensive line that, starting to gel run blocking wise. Pass blocking wise, they're doing pretty well. I think they've only yielded maybe two sacks all season. I don't have.
Yeah. Pass blocking's been amazing. Run blocking, I would say last night was their first really great outing, but the you know, the main things that they've improved every week, I think, and having Jeremy Hill was probably a factor, a guy who can take a smaller crease and make something of it, probably helped. I mean, I think they finished with 300 yards rushing, you know. Mm-hmm. So
kind of speaks for itself.
Yeah, I mean, you rush for 300 yards in a game, you did a good job,
right? Yeah, and Jeremy Hill, Miles, he likes to say, you know, from the running back depth chart's written in sand. You know, we've heard that analogy before. But Jeremy Hill's your starting running back. I mean, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about this. That's not taking away anything from Blue, Hilliard, or McGee. They've all got things they can do and contribute well to this football team. But Jeremy Hill's your workhorse back. He should be getting the ball. He should be touching the ball no less than 20 times a game, especially when we get into SEC play, when we get into conference play. There's no two ways about it. He's your bona fide. He's your starting running back. Behind him, I think it's whoever has the hot hand that can make some plays for you, get in relieving him. Passing again, Mettenberger, 13 to 18, 264 yards, 3 touchdown passes. He has 9 touchdown passes, which is the most in school history through a 3-game span. So, very encouraged by that. Again, majority of it's to, Beckham and Landry. Which I really have no problem with, Billy. I want to get your opinion on this because you're still hearing a lot of people harp on the fact that we haven't developed a third receiver. My take is this so far. We haven't really had to have a third guy step up yet. And granted, you can't double both Beckham and Landry. So I think one of them is always going to be locked into one-on-one coverage somewhere. So this harping on trying to develop a third guy, a consistent third guy is – I think it's kind of overblown. What's your take on that?
I think some of it's residual question marks on Beckham and Landry, who didn't have the greatest 2012s. I think that it's important to develop as many targets as we can. But I agree with you. I don't think it's necessarily a game breaker or a season breaker, I guess I should say. It's not going to be the reason why, this team loses a game or something like that. I think, there's still more that we haven't seen. I think the coach, you see a level of confidence in this offense that, it's pretty clear that after week one, when you saw a lot more spreading the field, a lot more multi-receiver looks in the last two games, when you really haven't had to do that, they've stayed in I formation and, two tight end looks and basically said, okay, beat the two guys that we've got. And then we'll show you. And if you can do that, then we'll show you a little more, you haven't seen a lot of passes to the running backs. You haven't seen a lot of throws to the tight ends other than a few times. I mean, part of it is, let's face it. You only throw it 19 times. There's only so many guys exactly. that you can throw the ball to, Right. This weekend, maybe, depending on how things go, obviously, if Mettenberger's throwing it 25 or 30 times, I think you'll see somebody get, the third most targets after those two. And it might be a different player every week, It may be one week that it's Traven Dorrell, maybe one week it's Cadron Boone, one week it's Travis Dixon, one week it's Jeremy Hill out of the backfield. I think it's
right.
That's part of a good passing game is having balance among the guys that you don't have to go to one guy to be successful.
Yeah. And I guess is what I'm getting at. If you only, like you said, if you're only dropping back 18 times and you completed 13, if options one or two, one and two are open 85% of the time, what really are you expecting from a third, quote unquote, third receiver? I mean, I'm not trying to poo-poo. The need for developing another guy. I mean, I think it's what you're going to see. If Beckham, I mean, he's going through his progressions. That's one thing Mettenberger is doing very well so far this season. He's going through his progressions and Beckham and Landry are open the majority of the time. Now, when we get in a conference play, it might change a little bit. Then you might start seeing them go other directions. But I think, like I said, I think it's going to be a majority Beckham and Landry, and you're going to see Mettenberger spread the ball around to different guys. They're going to have some spot plays in there. For certain guys, you saw glimpses of that on Saturday night. You saw that pass to Neighbors that went 52 yards. They took some shots downfield with Dorrell a couple times, completing one for 36. The pass to Dixon over the seam, which I got to tell you, with a strong running game and Beckham and Landry getting open, that's going to be open whenever they want to do it,
I agree. And Deshaun Smith's a guy who they're going to use, I think, a lot more.
Especially if there's still teams that think that we can't throw the ball and it's still going to try to put 8 in the box. I mean, my goodness gracious, a tight end over the seam would be. I mean, that's a pro style Cam Cameron bread and butter type play. That tight end over the seam. I know you're starting to see a lot of the pistol and spreading in the NFL right now, but that is a bread and butter play for a pro style offense. You just look at what Peyton Manning does and how he uses the receivers. Think back to what he did with Dallas Clark. Look at the game Julius Thomas had the other night against Baltimore. That right there, if you have two guys on the ends that can make plays a receiver like Beckham and Landry have been doing, you're gonna have a tight end open over the middle almost at will. Almost at will. And that it gets me giddy. It really gets me giddy. I don't wanna it's the long season, trust me. It's a long season. But just thinking about it just gets me excited. And I don't know what to say. I mean, it's going to be fun watching this passing game continue to progress. And hopefully they continue on that track. So,
yeah, I completely agree. It's been beyond, I think, what anybody really expected to this point, you know, and it's kind of been bizarro SEC this year when you think about it, because
a little bit,
you know, a lot of teams are looking really, really good on offense, and there's maybe, through 3 weeks, I've seen one team that I think has what you could call a dominant defense, and that's Florida.
Florida.
You know, yeah. LSU's has looked okay at times, struggled at others. You know, Alabama's hasn't looked great, you know, so far. But it's only two games. You know, Auburn's defense doesn't look as great. Georgia's defense has given up more than 30 points twice already.
Twice, right.
You know, but you've got a lot of really highly explosive offenses. Yeah. So, you know, it can make for an interesting year all in all.
Yeah, it could. It'll be definitely a fun year. Things to come in. It's going to be interesting how it all shakes out and what happens, going forward. From that, we move on. Conference play starts this week. LSU Auburn, the traditional, you know, usually 9 times out of 10. And usually this game at LSU is always in October. It's always in September in Auburn, but this year it's in September, which should be, it should always be the same week as Florida and Auburn. I'm sorry, Florida and Tennessee. It just seems right. LSU Auburn kicking off 6:45 ESPN. And we're going to go ahead and welcome in Chris from, collegeofmagnolia.com, part of SB Nation, another, a sister site to us. So, what's up, Chris? How you doing tonight?
Hey guys, thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
And thank you for joining us, Chris. Auburn coming off a really dramatic victory over Mississippi State on Saturday night, scoring that, you know, getting that touchdown with 10, I think it was 10 seconds left to go in the game. Talk a little bit about that game and talk a little bit about, starting off your first year starter at quarterback, Mr. Nick Marshall.
I think that game was, there were certainly causes for concern. The offense struggled quite a bit during the game. The running game had a really hard time getting going. Auburn had a really tough time stopping Dak Prescott for much of the game. But this was a game that in 2012, Auburn would have definitely lost and probably in the second half folded and gotten beat by 20 points or so. And so the fact that, you know, even though pretty much nothing was going Auburn's way for most of the night, the fact that Gus Malzahn had his team to sticking with it and staying in the game and, you know, having a chance to win at the end and then actually executing a 2-minute drive where they marched 88 yards. I mean, that says a lot about, you know, what Gus has this team doing so far right now. Nick Marshall, he was pretty excellent. He completed 23 of 34 passes, 339 yards, which was the most passing yards for an Auburn quarterback since the first game of the 2005 season. More passing yards than Cam Newton ever threw. Not that I'm comparing them, but it's a game that there's certainly things that Auburn still needs to improve upon, but it's nice to be able to win a game like that. I mean, it's been a while since Auburn's been able to do that.
What's y'all feeling so far? I mean, y'all pretty happy or pretty satisfied with what y'all seen from Gus Malzahn as y'all head coach now?
Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, you know, the offense is doing pretty much what we've been wanting it to do. I mean, it's definitely run first, we're averaging like 430 yards a game right now or something, which actually, you know, y'all were talking about how the SEC is kind of an offensive league this year. I mean, you're right. I mean, 430 yards a game, that ranks like eighth or tenth in the league. but yeah, I mean, we're moving the ball on offense, which after last season, that is a welcome sight. And on defense, I mean, everybody's just playing with better fundamentals, especially on defense, I think, which is a credit to Ellis Johnson coming in. You know, the secondary especially looks a lot more composed and competent compared to what we've seen in years past. So, yeah, I mean, I think that obviously it's a rebuilding year, and it's not, you know, Auburn's not going to be an SEC, you know, in the SEC title race this year. But I think that Auburn's probably going in the right direction, and I think that we ought to be able to get back to a bowl game this year.
Good. Just looking over season stats so far, you're definitely a run first team. Y'all almost 2-1 clip to this point, and that's been you can't really say it's been because y'all been ahead by a lot. Like I think y'all in a dogfight with Washington State in week 1 a little bit, but you have four guys. One of them is Nick Marshall. Four guys that have at least 24 carries. Is Trey Mason and Cameron Artis Payne, are they our two primary running backs, or is Corey Grant a guy that's getting more looks? Because, I mean, he seems to be more of a game breaker. Just looking at his yards per carry average. I know he had that long touchdown run. I don't know what game it was in. I'm just looking at season stats right now.
So, yeah. Yeah, Grant, he had that 75-yard touchdown run against Washington State. He's definitely, you know, sort of the Ontario McCaleb type back of the speed back. But unlike McCaleb, he's got a little bit – he's not quite as fast, but he's got a little bit more size on him, and he can actually, you know, go after defenders and not just run straight out of bounds. I mean, he can take on tacklers. So, you know, it's nice to have him, and I think that's why he's maybe getting more carries than we would have anticipated, just because he can do a little more than maybe we thought. But yeah, I mean, Trey Mason and Cameron Artis Payne are definitely the primary backs. If you were going to put that label on anybody, I mean, Artis Payne, he's definitely the bruiser of the group. He's the carry up the middle kind of guy. And if we're trying to wear down a defense late, he's the guy that wants to do that. Mason kind of, you know, he can do everything. He can run up the middle. He's got good speed. I mean, he ran for 1,000 yards last year, which in that offense was quite a feat. But yeah, it's really whoever has the hot hand gets the carries. I mean, Corey Grant broke out huge in the first game against Washington State. He ran for over 140 yards. In the second game against Arkansas State, Cam Artis Payne had like 102 yards, and Mason had, I think, 99 yards. Last week against State, like I said, the running game didn't really get going. None of them got to 50 yards. So it really just, I think it's just going to be who has the hot hand is going to be the guy that gets the carries.
And I see Marshall's got 27 carries. I mean, is a lot of that, I'm presuming, is by design in Malzahn's offense?
Yeah, he actually hasn't been running as much as I thought that he would have. There's a lot fewer, like, designed quarterback runs, I think. I mean, you know, we run some read option where he carries. But because he's not – I mean, you know, he's, like, a lot smaller than Cam Newton was, so he can't really take the punishment. So, I think that we're not giving him the, okay, you know, you're going to be the workhorse runner and, you know, carrying it up the middle a lot. I mean, he'll run some, but he really is – much more focused on throwing the ball than I thought he would be. Especially like when it's a called pass play, he doesn't just take off like the second the play breaks down a little bit. I mean, he really, really waits and tries to find somebody to throw to before he takes off.
Okay. So pocket passer by first. Yeah. So it's good traits to have. How do you see, the Auburn offense stacking up against LSU? I'll give you my thoughts first. My primary concern, right now for LSU, would LSU struggle with a little bit in the TCU game when we saw probably the closest offense that we've seen, you know, to Auburn's, and it's not exactly the same, but, was the ability to be able to contain the quarterback. And that's something that concerns me a little bit, with LSU's sort of inability to do that, you know, showing an ability to contain the pocket so far. Do you think they maybe go to a few more design runs with Marshall? How do you see Auburn attacking LSU on Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, I think that so far it's sort of been tough to gauge just exactly how this offense is going to look as the season goes on, because, I mean, Gus has been sort of implementing more and more of the playbook each week. And yeah, I mean, I think that Auburn will definitely want to get the running game going. It's going to be something, whether it's working or not, that's pretty much everything else in the offense comes from at least trying to run the ball. But I mean, I think that honestly that, that Marshall, I think he may throw some more just because he proved last week that his accuracy is getting better. He doesn't make any bad decisions in the passing game. Like that's the biggest attribute for me, is that he hasn't thrown a ball into coverage yet. I mean, he makes really good, you know, he might not make an accurate throw, but he never makes a poor decision throwing. So I think that Gus trusts him a little bit to drop back and pass a little more, which I think might open up his ability to run as well. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if definitely using Marshall as the catalyst of, you know, trying to get him to spread the field with the passing game, and then taking advantage of that spread field and doing a little more running later on.
Yeah, I think it's important for LSU just, you know, defensively to make some plays on him early. I mean, this is a guy who's a true freshman. Am I correct?
He's actually he's a junior. He's a JUCO
I'm sorry. He's a JUCO transfer, but nevertheless, I mean, his first start on the road in the SEC. Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's important for LSU to make some plays on him early, whether getting him rattled in the pocket, hurrying him, getting a hit on him, some way or another, to kind of get him, you know, out of his game a little bit. You know, Like I said, not only am I worried about quarterback containment, LSU's, they've given up a few passes downfield too. So if he's got some guys open, he's shown the ability to hit those guys. You know, it could be kind of worrisome for the defense a little bit, for LSU, but, you know, that combined with, you know, a couple of guys, you know, running loose a little bit, you know, I think could be, you know, a good measurement for success for y'all on Saturday night.
Oh, definitely. I mean, I'm looking forward, because, you know, this season, like I said earlier, it's rebuilding. I mean, nobody's expecting Auburn to be a contender this year. We want to win the games that we, you know, should be able to win, and against, you know, relatively close competition. And then against the teams like LSU and Alabama and Georgia and Texas A&M, I mean, I want Auburn to be competitive in these games. And if Auburn wins any of these games, I mean, that's pretty much just gravy at this point. So, yeah, I mean, I'm just looking forward to seeing, I mean, how the team as a whole handles the environment and handles, you know, playing a really good team on the road, and specifically how Marshall does it, because he's done a good job of, you know, keeping his poise and never getting rattled so far. So I'm excited. I mean, I just want to see if he can keep that up, you know, in a tough environment.
Right. Billy, what's your biggest concern for LSU on defense when Auburn has the ball?
Containing Marshall. Through my limited film study, I haven't looked at the whole Mississippi State game, but you know, he impresses me. He's a smooth, kind of fluid athlete. You can tell he's raw and still kind of learning quarterback. But you can see he throws a really nice ball. He's quick, and he has a sense of a kind of, I think, knowing, I guess, what to do in a given situation. He doesn't always know in terms of passing and running the same way. But I think that's a guy who, I think by the end of, you know, you want to catch early, and next year is probably going to be, you know, one of the better quarterbacks in the SEC based on what I've seen.
Yeah, he's further along right now than I thought he was going to be, because, I mean, you know, I had concerns last year I think he was at Garden City Community College. I mean, he threw 20 interceptions, which I think was the second most in JUCO. His completion percentage was below 60%. So I definitely, you know, I knew that he was, you know, he's a good athlete and that he's a guy who can, you know, make some plays, but I was worried about that kind of stuff. And also just having no idea, you know, what his confidence level would be like, you know, how he'll handle making a mistake or having something go wrong. And so far, I mean, yeah, he looks like a guy who's out there. He knows what he wants to do. He knows what he needs to do. And he just goes out there and does it. And, you know, after last year's quarterback situation of having a bunch of guys who had just no confidence whatsoever, it's really nice to see a guy who looks cool, calm, and collected.
And the thing that jumps out at me that, like, my first thought was, you know, and it's a big joke that Texas offered him as a safety. I was like, my thought was, this is kind of what Johnny Manziel would have looked like if he'd gone to Texas to play safety, done it for a year, left, and then followed the same route Marshall did. Because didn't he go to Georgia as a defensive back originally and then went back to junior college and started playing quarterback again? Because you can see, like, he's not a fluid quarterback, but he's a fluid athlete, you know?
Yeah. 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 He was a, I think he was a cornerback. I know he was a defensive back at Georgia. He played quarterback in high school, but yeah, Georgia recruited him and several other schools recruited him as a defensive back. So he certainly is raw. And I mean, in the first game of the year, he, I mean,
his numbers
were
pretty
comical.
Good, I remember that.
Yeah. I mean, I think it may have been the first throw that he made of the season. Maybe not the first throw, but one of the first throws. It definitely his first deep ball. He tried to throw a deep ball to Sammy Coates, and Coates was wide open, and Marshall overthrew him by at least 20 yards. I mean, it was just not even close. So I'm happy. Yeah, I mean, and he admitted after the game that, you know, he was nervous. It was his first college start, but I mean, there were a lot of throws in that first game, and there were a good bit of throws in the second game where it was like, I mean, he's not just missing these guys, but he's missing them really, really badly. Like, these throws aren't even close to anybody. So I'm glad that, you know, against Mississippi State, he still had a few throws that weren't great, but overall, and considering he was asked to throw a lot more, his accuracy seems to be getting really better in a short amount of time.
Who are some of the guys he's going to be throwing to? Talk a little bit about the skilled players, wide receivers, tight ends.
Well, it's sort of the passing game, I mean, you don't really know what to expect. Auburn doesn't have a go-to receiver yet. I mean, wide receiver was a big issue last year, and I mean, basically the two reliable guys that we had, Emery Blake and Philip Lutzenkirchen, are both gone. So, I mean, this year, coming into the year, we had pretty much no idea who might step up and be a go-to target. Sammy Coates, he's sort of he's the deep threat of the bunch. He's got good height. He's, you know, good stature, and I think he's probably the speediest receiver out there. So he will definitely be the guy that, you know, if Marshall makes a big play on a long ball, it'll probably be to Sammy Coates. Quan Bray, he's another guy with some speed. He's probably maybe the more consistent guy of the group. So he'll be definitely a factor. Ricardo Lewis is another guy who will definitely get some targets. The tight end, C.J. Uzomah, who was on the Mackey Award watch list, he's the guy who caught the game-winning touchdown against Mississippi State. He'll be, you know, I mean, Gus Malzahn loves to use the tight end in the passing game, and so I think that he'll be definitely used this weekend. But it's really just – Marcus Davis also, he on the final drive against State, he's a true freshman. He had four catches on that final drive. So I think that he's sort of growing up and becoming a bigger part of the offense as well. But it's really just, I mean, I really, you want to ask me who would be the leading receiver in any given game, and I'd probably just throw a dart, and wherever that dart lands, that's who I'd pick, because it could be anybody at this point.
A little bit of wide, you always hear about run back by committee, a little bit of wide receiver by committee. And I know Malzahn uses, like, he likes to use that tight end, and I've seen enough of Lutzenkirchen in my life to remember that. Yeah, defensively for LSU, I mean, just to kind of echo and put a bow on talking about this side of the ball, LSU, it's pretty cut and dry. It's going to be containing a running game and forcing Marshall into some third and long situations and forcing him to make some decisions, you know. Hopefully, you know, throwing a ball downfield to some covered receivers, and not so much when he gets flushed out of the pocket, him killing us with his feet is what scares me the most. And that's anytime you play an offense like this, that's my biggest concern right now for LSU, and something that LSU's defended pretty well over the past, but with with 8 new starters on defense, I'm a little worried. I think that's why you saw a lot of the different combinations of players on Saturday night, Billy, as far as getting people on the field and getting people some playing time. I think Quan, we were talking about Quan Alexander earlier, covering guys. I think it's very important for him to kind of be that guy, kind of be that quarterback spot, because he's got the speed that can kind of run down these guys and not let these quarterbacks pick up 9 yards on 3rd and 7 when they get flushed out of the pocket. That's my biggest thing as far as what LSU needs to do defensively. They do that, they'll be fine. Switching gears to the other side of the ball, I think offensively, Billy, I think it's pretty cut and dry what LSU is going to do this season. They're going to, I'll be interested to see how Auburn comes out and defends LSU to open up. Chris, given what you've seen so far in LSU's improvement over the passing game, do you think teams, I mean, granted it was against TCU who didn't show much the other night against Texas Tech and then against UAB and Kent State, do you still think teams, especially in conference play, are going to come out and still try to load the box and force LSU to beat them downfield first?
I think that some teams certainly will. I don't know if Auburn will or not, but I think that teams that do that, it'll be a mistake, because obviously Mettenberger looks better. The passing game, I mean, looks a lot better. I haven't been able to watch a ton of LSU because all y'all's games come on at the same time as Auburn games these days, apparently. But from what I can tell, the offense as a whole and the passing game in particular seems to be a lot better. Ellis Johnson, he runs the 4-2-5, so Auburn will be running a lot of nickel, which will be better for pass defense anyway. I think that the key for LSU offensively will be basically attacking Auburn's linebackers, because that's definitely the weak link of the defense. And that's how teams have been moving the ball in Auburn all year, either by, short passing situations, short throws over the middle, or just attacking the middle in the run. Auburn's got to find a way to get better play out of the linebackers, and we haven't really been able to do that yet. So I think that I wouldn't be surprised if attacking the linebackers was what LSU wanted to do on offense.
Yeah, I'm going to be real curious to see how LSU comes out and attacks as well. We saw him go to the air early in all against TCU and then against UAB too. They went to the air pretty early. And then, once they built up the lead, there was no reason to throw the ball anymore. So it was slanted very heavily run the pass. But against TCU, I think we ran 80 plays, but I think we threw the ball 32 times. So it was still pretty heavily to the run. We ran the ball 48. Of course, a lot of that was with a lead late in the game. Well, not a big lead, but leads at 10-point leads at various points in the game. So establishing running game was, running down clock was part of the MO. I think it's going to be a lot of what you've seen so far. I think LSU's they haven't really tipped their hand too much as far as how many plays they have and how many different ways they can utilize all the weapons that they have. But I think you've seen against UAB and against Kent State and against TCU what LSU wants to do offensively. They're gonna stretch the field early. They're gonna make you defend both those wide receivers, because Beckham and Landry have proven that they can be playmakers. They're gonna use some different guys, in different spots, whether it's a little swing out to the fullback, maybe getting a tight end over the middle somewhere, maybe taking a shot downfield to a slot guy, and then they're gonna. I think they're going to pound Jeremy Hill. I think you might see some different things, to get McGee to ball out in space this week, Billy. I think you might see that in weeks to come. Cause I think he's a guy that can do some damage once he gets the ball out in the open.
I agree. I think you'll see the offense that you've seen to this point, which is to say, a fairly balanced passing game with a power running game trying to complement it. And if anything, you might see a little more lean on the run this week, especially if Auburn struggles to stop it. And that's the best way to protect a defense that you're a little iffy on, is to try and keep it off the field as much as you can too.
Without question. Yeah. And then that's something that Les Miles has gone to in the past. And it's, if it's working, he's not going to go away from it. And that's, And as long as we're up, nobody's going to complain about it in the call-in shows on Saturday night and on the message boards on Sunday. So, pretty cut and dry as far as what else she needs to do. Intangibles, special teams. Chris, if you field goal kicks a 60-yard field goal, just make sure y'all cover. Because we have listed on our depth chart a missed field goal return specialist. So.
Yeah, we'll definitely have to game plan for that.
Yeah, because it happens. It happens at least 7 times a week in college football.
Oh yeah, so often.
So, just to be on the lookout for that intangible. just a couple notes from the press conference. I don't know if you see LSU try this again. They hit a couple squib kicks on Saturday night. Les Miles said that was by design. Harrison's kicking a ball through the freaking roof right now. He can almost do whatever he wants. If Les Miles wants him to squib it, he'll squib it. If he wants him to kick it 15 yards deep, over the goalpost, he'll do that because he's got a powerful leg. If he wants a high kick to about the 3 to see how the coverage team is on, it seems he can do that too. So, minus the return from TCU for a touchdown in the first game, kickoff coverage has been a little bit good. But I'm looking at the notes from the Washington State game, and y'all had Trey Mason take a kickback. So, that could be something that can kind of serve as a catalyst for Auburn, kind of making this a game. Something LSU's showing a little bit of vulnerability to is a kickoff return. So, if you want to talk intangibles, that's something to look out for. With that being said, Billy, you have anything else to add as far as this game goes?
If there's one thing I've learned to expect with LSU and Auburn, it's for it to be the unexpected. Well, I can't think of too many times when this game has gone totally according to script. So, I would tell everybody to kind of keep their eyes open for that. And if you're watching at home, rarely is this game not entertaining in some sort of way.
No, without question. Yeah, this has always been a fun and entertaining game. It's, it's Auburn. So, it's opening SEC play. It's an SEC West game. And right now, hell, Auburn's leading the SEC West. So we need to knock them off the pedestal here. All right, I'm going to pull up the pick. First game we're going to look at, we're going to go to the SEC East. Tennessee going to Gainesville, getting 14.5. I'll let you go first, Chris.
I'll take Tennessee right there.
Okay. Billy?
It could be, recency bias and seeing the Gators struggle against Miami, but I have a feeling Tennessee finds a way to at least cover this game and maybe make it a little close. Butch Jones really needs to get some kind of signature win that first year at Tennessee, and this might be his best chance early on.
Yeah, Tennessee kind of licking their wounds a little bit. I was kind of for reasons only been known to myself. I picked them to cover against Oregon last week, which was completely asinine. On the same token, I don't think Florida's offense is good enough to cover 14.5 points. Their defense is, they can get a defensive touchdown or two and blow this game open. But I like Tennessee in this spot to cover this spread. I just think 14.5 is too much with the lack of productivity on Florida's offense. Let's go to Damn, ain't really much to pick.
Yeah, it's a pretty weak slate of games this weekend.
I'm trying to find something. I don't know. Boise State and Fresno State. Boise, going to Fresno, actually underdogs in this game. Boise's getting 4.5 at Fresno. Boise not quite the powerhouse they once were. Chris.
Yeah, I think that Boise's down a little bit. I think that Fresno, a little bit that I've seen of them, they seem like they're pretty good. It's at Fresno. I'll take Fresno to cover that.
All right, Billy.
There's Boise State and Fresno.
Yeah, Boise State and Fresno State.
It's funny that actually could be a really entertaining game.
I wish so.
that I'm gonna try to, if I have a chance, I'm gonna try to plan to watch that on Friday night. Give me Fresno. You know, Derek Carr, from the little bit that I've seen, he seems like he's a legit quarterback. And you know, in these situations, give me the team with the best quarterback.
And the home field, so I can't disagree with that. So I'm gonna make it unanimous. I'm gonna go with Fresno State as well. Oh, let's see. Let's go. All right. Oh, here we go. Michigan State, Notre Dame. I missed this one. I'll overlook it. Michigan State, undefeated. Notre Dame, lost to Michigan 2 weeks ago. Looked less than impressive. Took a strong fourth quarter to come back to beat Purdue. Still favored by 7.5 over Michigan State. I'll start with you on this one, Billy.
Oh, give me Notre Dame. Michigan State can't score on anybody. I forget what you said the spread was, but
7.5.
Michigan State can't score 7 points unless they're scoring points on defense. They're not gonna beat Notre Dame.
Okay, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to agree. I'm not all that impressed with Notre Dame, but I'm probably less impressed with Michigan State. I think Notre Dame's offense is good enough to get away from that one a little bit.
Okay. Well, yeah, I had no idea because I'm looking at 3-0 for Michigan State, and I just know what Notre Dame's done in their last two games. So, but y'all made up my mind for me. I don't like picking Notre Dame, because I usually pick with my heart a lot of times with these picks, but, I'm going to take y'all word for it. And this is just for fun anyway. So give me Notre Dame to cover that 7.5. Let's go to that game we were talking about earlier. We're talking about it off the air because they put the spread on it, but Arkansas is going to Rutgers, getting 1.5. Chris.
I think I'll take Rutgers. I mean, I'm just, you know, I don't know anything about Arkansas. They struggled with Samford pretty mightily. Southern Miss, I mean, that wasn't all that impressive a win. I'll take Rutgers at home.
All right, Billy.
I think I agree with Chris. You know, that's just a long trip to a different kind of environment for a program like Arkansas. And you know, I imagine they'll just play a little iffy. You know, Rutgers comes out with some emotion and kind of looking to try and, you know, stick it to an SEC team, and I think they take care of business.
Okay. Based solely for the sake of just disagreeing for once in these picks, I'm going to pick Arkansas for no other reason than that. Let's go to the Pac-12. Arizona State, 2-0 undefeated, obviously. Ranked number 23, traveling to Stanford, getting 7.5. Billy.
I'm sorry, say it again.
Arizona State getting 7.5 at Stanford.
Give me Stanford. You know, at this point, I roll with them. I like the way they play football. I like their style of play. And, you know, Arizona State's a nice team, but I have a feeling Stanford just kind of rolls over them.
Okay. Chris?
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, Arizona State technically is undefeated, but, I mean, after watching that Wisconsin game, I think they'll sort of roll over knowing that they deserve to have a loss in their schedule. So yeah. I'll take Stanford.
Yeah, Stanford, that's a good football team. And probably the only team in the Pac-12 that can challenge Oregon, maybe, the way they're freaking scoring points on everybody. All right, the game we've been talking about, LSU hosting Auburn. Auburn getting, what's the spread on here? It's 16.5. Chris, I'll start with you.
I think Auburn will keep it a little closer than maybe at least Vegas thinks. I think that the offense will have some success, the defense will have some success, but not enough on either side of the ball to win. But I think it'll probably be a little closer. I'll take Auburn against the spread, probably in like a 33-20, 33-21 kind of game.
All right, Billy.
I like LSU to cover. I think they'll use the run. They'll pass their way out to a nice lead and use the running game in the second half with Jeremy Hill breaking a couple of runs and kind of setting the stage for his big showdown with Todd Gurley next weekend. I think LSU at least covers the 17.
Okay. Yeah. I'm This is the first of many measuring six games for this LSU football team, this LSU offense. You're seeing a defense that's playing a lot of young guys, trying to find, you know, an identity, getting a little bit better and better each week. You've seen an offense that has thrown a ball at will to this point. You got your full slate of running backs. Everybody's healthy. This is the first of what can be many statement games for this new look LSU offense. And, I think it starts on Saturday night. I like LSU by 21. I like them somewhere in the neighborhood of 38 to 17. And, so Chris, you're on an island, which I wouldn't expect you to pick anything else other than Auburn to cover. So
I gotta be some sort of homer.
You've got to. I mean, I wouldn't want it any other way. That being said, that will wrap up the show. Again, fans listening to the show, if you have not signed up for the Go Show Pick'em, you can still sign up if you have not done so already. There are weekly prizes to be given away for winners. We pick anywhere from 11 to 13 or 14 games every week against the spread. There's a tiebreaker game at the bottom. It's usually who LSU is playing to determine tiebreakers if there's a tie, you know, in the standings up top. Feel free to sign up at any time you want. I mean, compete for those weekly prizes. It's real fun to play, and you can see how you stack up. I don't know how everybody, you know, I don't know how the hosts are doing. Billy, do you do this at all? Do you have an account? Do you play this?
The Pick'em? No, I've never done Pick'ems before.
Oh, okay. All right. Pocket kind of – he's up there a little bit. I think me and Pocket are actually kind of somewhat similar understandings. After a rough first week, I'm kind of creeping back up. I'm up to the mid 40s. I don't know what my overall record is. I have to look at the stand. I'm not going to bore you with the standing, but, you know, I've got to uphold the integrity of the show, because I had a bad first week. And last year I was in the top 10 the whole year. And I think I finished maybe like two games out of finishing first. So I'm slowly creeping back up. So I'm issuing a challenge to all you users out there to keep me at bay and keep me off your heels, because I'm coming. And shaking off my rust, you know. Hopefully, I'm hoping Pocket has like a curve where he drops your worst week, and that'll kind of boost me up a little bit. So, but yeah, go ahead and sign up for that. You can find it. Pocket usually links it up on Anna Valley Shook. Usually every Tuesday or Wednesday. If it's not up Tuesday, it's there first thing Wednesday morning. Especially because we pick a lot of Thursday games too. I don't think we had one this week because I think Clemson's playing Thursday night. I didn't see them on that. Yeah, do that. And again, you can find Chris and Chris. Y'all do a little podcast too over there, don't y'all?
Yeah, we do. It's on the War Eagle Sports Radio Network. Actually, there's an iOS app for that. There should be an Android app soon, and we've got the link up on the website, the College and Mag Show. We usually do that on Mondays.
Okay.
So it's up. It's up now.
Good deal. And again, the SB Nation site is collegeandmagnolia.com. Is that correct?
That is correct. And we're on Twitter at collegeandmag.
Very good. All right. For Chris Furmeister, did I pronounce that correctly?
You did, yes.
All right. For Billy Gamilla, for Podcast Behind the Scenes, this has been Kerry Munch. Oh, and I almost forgot. Again, I'm plugging this again. Friday morning, Go Show fans, if y'all are up and at 'em early, come out to Walk-Ons, where the morning Express show with Robin Mead on the HLN network is doing a new show called Rivalry Express. They're doing it. They're going to 8 college campuses, throughout the course of the season. LSU and Auburn is the first one to come into. So they're going to be at Walk-Ons. The show airs starting at 6 a.m. Eastern, so 5 Central to like, I don't know what, I think it's like 10 or 11. But the reason I'm bringing it up is because through a person, an acquaintance from high school, a friend from high school, I have been dubbed with the responsibility of setting up a tailgate for the show and cooking Louisiana tailgating food for the television show. So I'm looking forward to it. So if any fans listen to the show can come out there, you know, on Friday morning, be a part of the tailgate, show up on TV, show the rest of the world how we tailgate at LSU. I mean, most of the world knows, but show them that we can do it on a Friday morning too at 5 a.m. So if you want to cut class or skip work, play hooky, call in sick, come on out there, and you'll get fed, and Well, I'm sure we have some fun. I really don't know what to expect because this has all happened within like the span of like the last 7 to 8 days. And just by my own stupid dumb luck, I'm getting the opportunity to do this. So you know, if you don't maybe DVR watching on TV, I'm supposedly getting interviewed by Robin Mead, who was pretty hot, in the pictures I've seen. So it should be fun. For everybody, for Chris again, for Billy, for Podcat, I'm Kerry Muntz. We say go Tigers. We are done. Bye-bye.